Wonderful to have Dr. Tim Welsh join us for another Kōrero. Tim is an academic specialising in transportation and infrastructure and urban modelling. And as the new Move On powers give police the ability to clear rough sleepers from public spaces, Tim, who's a critic of that move, warns that the laws risk worsening homelessness by punishing poverty rather than addressing its root causes. Thank you for joining us on the program, Tim. Dale again here at Wātea. Thank you for your time. Kia ora.
Marina, thanks for having me.
Good on you, Tim. Obviously, concerns. Too many of these rough sleepers are our people, fallen on tough times, and now they're unsightly, deemed unsightly, and pushed to the margins. You argue these laws effectively criminalise poverty. What impact do you think Move On orders is going to have on people already experiencing homelessness, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, nothing good could come of this. Essentially, what we're doing is telling anybody who is unhoused, has nowhere else to go, and is kind of forced to be on the streets, that they need to now move somewhere else that's maybe less safe, or they don't have access to some food or medicine or other things like that. So essentially, it's just trying to sweep away those that really can't afford to go anywhere else. And if they don't do that, then they face a fine. And if they don't do that, they could potentially face jail time.
Bizarre, but that's the reality. As I mentioned, a lot of people are living rough. They've got very complex needs. But like you, we don't want to criminalise them because they haven't got a pūtea or can't afford a house. And the Māori ways to wrap our arms around people who are doing it tough. Sadly, the government feels that the needs of shoppers and tourists supersede their needs. Understandable to a point, but you know, what sort of support services are they offering? As they say, move on, we don't want you here. The government says it's about restoring order in public places, Tim. Why do you believe that approach risks making the problem worse rather than solving it?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is kind of just a lot of strong talk, but there isn't a lot backing up kind of the alternative. So once we tell someone to move on, they have to be gone for 24 hours. But we've really kind of pulled the rug out when it comes to what else they could do. So we've gotten rid of most of our emergency housing. The motel system we had to house people is mostly gone. We're not adding any more funding for social housing through Kangaroa, so there's no new housing built for people who can't afford their own housing. We're removing jobs from the government. We're removing funding from frontline medical work. We took $10 million out of a system that already is short 650 workers to help people in medical crisis. We've moved that to funding other organizations. So everything that people on the street could turn to get help, to rise out of homelessness and a bit less impoverished, we kind of removed those options. So we haven't done anything. We said, let's not look at the people that are on the street, but we haven't offered them any meaningful alternative.
Tim, when you look at international models, we get images of, like in the States, of rows of people sleeping on streets in tents. What international perspectives might be of assistance to us as we try and chart a way forward in this regard, Tim?
Yeah, and I don't think we should use the U.S. as a model, and it's certainly a problem there as well. But if we look at other places, so like if we look at Britain, they've had a vagrancy law since the 1800s. They're repealing that and hopefully replacing it with something else. And then if we look at Finland, they've decided to put people in housing to fund places for them to live rather than just telling them to find somewhere else to go.
Well, obviously, I was down in the Britomart. Well, I've been down there a few times, actually, and there were a lot of guys who were camped out outside Macca's down there back in the day. They're no longer there, which makes me think, well, where the hell are they, Tim?
Yeah, that's a problem, and I don't think they've gone on to find safe housing. Mm. Again, they're just kind of out of view. But we know that the homelessness has increased significantly. We've seen huge increases in the people that are seeking shelter, that are unhomed. And, you know, if we look at kind of what job seeker benefits are here in New Zealand, we hear people saying that they're very generous, that we give people quite a bit of support. But the reality is, when we look at other countries that are equivalent to New Zealand, we're at the very bottom in terms of how much of a living wage we can, or how much of a benefit we can get, we do give people. So there's not even a lot of support in terms of if we can house these people, if we can give them some amount of money to buy food and basic necessities. Even that is barely, you know, scraping by compared to international standards.
I thank you for your perspectives. Our guest today is Dr. Timothy Welsh. Te rangatira. I notice you've got a lot of experience made in public transportation performance and connectivity. And I just wonder, on the cusp of the opening of the Central Rail Loop, and there's a lot of expectation that it will result in a huge increase in the use of public transport. I just wonder whether you believe that that is going to be a reality. I live in a place that sees many empty buses drive past my place, heaps and heaps, Tim. And you know, having spent quite a lot of time in Sydney as well, where we know that the rail network is very well established, very well patronised, I just wonder whether this... And, you know, I applaud the fact that we're going to be able to not have a dead end at the Britomart, so don't get me wrong, but do you think it's going to be the boost to public transport and therefore taking away major congestion in the projections that have been used thus far? When it opens, what are you anticipating it will do to public transport and the way people get around in Auckland?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it will have a meaningful change in terms of the connectivity of how well and how easy it is to get around by rail and in a way by bus for those that are downtown and other places. But I think we also have to kind of pull back what we expect to happen right away. It's going to be a staged opening. It's going to happen slowly. People are going to have to get used to it and adjust to it. But the reality is, and even though we see it sometimes that are some empty buses, but buses do carry the majority of people in Auckland and most public transport systems. So for every person that's on a train, there's five more people that take the bus. They don't always get congested during off-peak hours, but they're there during commute hours. So, you know, I think in terms of making the system more connected and providing more access, it will do that. It'll take time to do it. I don't know how well our outcomes will match the numbers projected, but it will have an impact. But, you know, what we need is still to continue with a system that takes people where they need to go and does that frequently and affordably. So we can't just stop at the zero. We have to keep extending the system and providing buses fast passage through our streets, so they're not just in traffic. This isn't a silver bullet. There's a lot more we still need to do to make the system work better.
What about suburbanism? I mean, most of us shop at our local malls. You know, the old days of going into town for the bright lights of the big smoke have seemingly passed. So, you know, running transport systems and the cost involved with doing this, which I'm led to believe is, you know, getting up into the around $6 billion, which is huge money, in order to get more people into the city, do you think that our culture as Aucklanders involves the city in ways that it might have in the past? Or are we a suburban mob, Aucklanders?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, it really is a long-term trend that we've pushed away from the central city out into the suburbs. You know, there is legislation, there's work to try to constrain some of that outward growth so that things like public transport and infrastructure can be more efficient and less expensive, but that's a long-term project. But, you know, the reality is that if we look at the social costs, the cost we all pay for someone to drive in the city, even just like 10 kilometers across the city, the cost we pay for every person in a car alone is about 5 times what we pay for the entire fare of someone in a bus or on a train, because we have to look at all the congestion effects, the cost of a crash, the cost of delays. It's really expensive. So even though this is a big investment, if we can shift people out of cars into any form of public transport, we're saving the country in general a significant amount of money. And those downtown trips are the most expensive trips in terms of who's in a car. So it is centered on the downtown, and the downtown that's not thriving like it once was, 30, 40 years ago. But, this is one step that may help revitalize that. And on the bigger picture, there are big, big cost savings. And it certainly saves us a lot more money than building more highways and widening roads, and continue to encourage people to drive.
Tēnā koe, Mayor Brown is talking about a congestion charge to go into the city sooner rather than later. How prevalent is this in international urban models, and do you think it is worth pursuing?
Well, we have some really good examples. So the one that everyone points out is London, who started in 2008, and they kind of drew a line around the city and charged people to get in and out with some exceptions. But what they did first was pour just tons of money into public transport and made it affordable and reliable and fast before they ever started charging people to come into the city. And that's the same in Stockholm, Sweden. That's the same in Singapore and many other countries that have done that. So it's a model that's prevalent and growing, and it's successful. But the key is you have to give people an alternative, and we haven't quite gotten there yet. So if all we do is tell people they have to pay money to get into the city, but we don't provide them a cheaper, faster alternative than driving, then it is a penalty, and we have to be very careful about that. So it's really the keys and the details and what you provide for people and what you do with the money once you raise it. It can't just go back into roads or other funds. It has to go back into those alternatives to driving. That's the only fair option for people.
Interesting kōrero, and I thank you in allowing me to morph our kōrero from homelessness to city rail loops. Te Koru might be a
Sure.
nice name for that one, eh? Don't you think?
Yeah.
I know they were pitching for names for the central rail loop, and of course into congestion charges as well. With Dr. Timothy Welsh, who's a works in urban planning architecture at Auckland Uni. And I thank you, Tim, for joining us. Look forward to another kōrero one day soon. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Tēnā koe.